So, an overview. First, I'll tell you a little bit about New York City and our outbreaks, H1N outbreaks in 2009 in the spring, and our plan in response to our experience for how vaccine would be distributed. Then I'll talk a little bit about the New York City Immunization Information System and how we used it in the campaign, the H1N1 campaign, and talk about some lessons learned and conclusions, et cetera. So New York City, probably everybody knows, big city, 8.3 million people, and about 1.4 million of those people are school-aged children. We have about 127,000 kids born every year in New York City, and we have a lot of immunizing sites, roughly about 2,000 that immunize children, with about 5,000 individual medical providers in those sites, and we have really a wild estimate of 5,000 adult sites. We're not really sure how many there are, but this is what we're estimating, with probably around 10,000 individuals in those sites vaccinating. So in the spring 2009, we had very large outbreaks in our schools. Hundreds of students were sickened, rapid spread, high disease rates. We had to close over 50 schools. It was really a big crisis in New York. 12% of New Yorkers reported flu-like illness, and up to 1 million people were ill at that time. So we needed to plan very carefully for the coming flu season. And what we decided to do as a health department was, with our own health department teams, offer vaccine in all elementary schools in New York City and at weekend points of distribution, primarily to target our school-age children. And then to recruit providers serving adult priority groups. I'll talk a little later about how our registry was really childhood focused. We did not have adult participation. So the groups that we really wanted to recruit were OBGYNs, colleges, uniformed services, emergency responders, pharmacies, and residential facilities. And our plan was to distribute vaccine as widely as possible to all the immunizers in the city, all the adult immunizers that I previously talked about, as well as all the hospitals, FQHCs, doctor's offices serving children and adults. We had a very ambitious plan. And we also decided to require reporting to our IIS of individual H1 doses administered to individual patients, which was not aggregate reporting. Some of the providers were not very happy with us about that, but we decided to do that because we had an infrastructure in place with our IIS. We wanted better accountability for use of the vaccine. Our experience in accounting for VFC vaccine with aggregate reporting was that the numbers were often inaccurate. Some people made up the numbers, we would discover. So we wanted to try to get more accurate numbers. And then we wanted to facilitate more accurate tracking of vaccine uptake and establish a more accurate denominator for assessing vaccine safety. Because we probably all remember at the beginning of the campaign, there were a lot of concerns about this vaccine and how safe it was. So our New York City IIS is called the CIR. We've had mandatory reporting of immunizations administered to children under 19 years of age for many years, since about 1997. We load birth certificates on a weekly basis, so we are population-based. We had about 2,000 childhood facilities registered, very few adult facilities. About 90% of the 2,000 childhood facilities were reporting regularly on all their childhood immunizations administered. The system, the CIR, currently has 4.3 million individuals and 47 million immunizations. And about, we estimate around 90% of the kids living in the city, 90% of children under 19 are enrolled in the CIR. And one key thing was that we had done a lot of work in previous years to use our CIR to account for VFC vaccine. And we've been using CIR to generate the doses administered reports for the providers, and we actually send those reports out to all of our childhood providers regularly on a quarterly basis. So we were well positioned to account for H1N1 vaccine, but there were a few things that we wanted to add to our registry to facilitate reporting, particularly for the new providers. And these costs of these features were covered by the Public Health Emergency Response Funds. I'm happy to say that we didn't have to find it in our budget, because if we did, it wouldn't have been there. So we added a new quick add patient and H1N1 vaccination feature, which was go online and very quickly report a patient and a dose. Of course, as we all had to do, we had to reprogram our forecasting rules to include the H1N1 rules. And we had a report adverse event to vaccination feature in our online registry, our web application, but it was not very prominent in the application. We moved it to a much more prominent place in anticipation of adverse events being reported during the campaign more often. So here's how we use, and bear with me, this is a little busy here, but the health department notified providers of all ages, that in order to get H1N1 vaccine, they had to register with us, the CIR. And they then started calling and faxing and emailing in massive numbers. And we assigned them a facility code if they weren't already registered with us. And we had our VFC assign them a PIN. We had to match those two numbers, the code and the PIN, so we could track distribution and reporting. We gave the provider these numbers. The provider was then instructed to go online and complete their vaccine provider agreement. The H1N1 vaccine order was then faxed to the CIR by the provider. The CIR staff would check to see that there was a valid CIR facility code on the order and that the provider had submitted the vaccine provider agreement. And then the VFC staff would have to take the order and place it with the CDC. And then the provider would be reporting patient by patient, immunization by immunization to the CIR. And one thing we had to do was we had to suspend the adult immunization reporting requirement for consent. We had the governor declared an emergency, and one of the things suspended was consent for reporting a vaccination to the immunization registry for an adult. So, results. Here's where I like to say, be careful what you wish for, because you just might get it. So, we had always fantasized about becoming a lifespan registry, and in the matter of about 3 or 4 months, we transitioned to that status. So you can see by this graph that this is showing new facilities registered in the CIR by month from January 2009 to just about now, and you can see the surge in facilities that we registered particularly in October 2009. So this is pretty much the same data presented in a table. I just wanted to show you the types of facilities we registered and point out that this is actually an undercount, because you'll see uniform emergency responders here is the number of facilities is seven. Well, one of those is all the firefighters in the New York City Fire Department. So we count that as one site. So that accounts for a lot of people. And these pharmacy chains, which we have on here is 34. They were some large national chains with hundreds, literally hundreds of stores across the city. So a lot of new providers. Mostly what we registered were the private adult offices. 65% of new facilities were private adult offices. So we registered over 3,000 new providers as a part of this campaign. One other thing, we did find a few private pediatric facilities that don't immunize that often and were sort of under our radar, but came out of the woodwork for H1N1 campaign. 67 of them, small number. We had about 2,000, but we were happy they came out. So for total registered facilities, since we started our registry back in 1996, through August of 2009, we had registered a total of 2,000 facilities. About 1,800 of those were active in August 2009. Then between September 2009 and March 2010, we registered over 3,000 more facilities. So that's 150% increase, and we now have over 5,000 facilities registered. A lot of work in a short period of time. And we wanted to get a sense how many of the adult provider sites did we register, do we have in our registry? So we got a hold of a list from Medicare and matched it against the CIR. This was a list of practices that had billed Medicare for influenza shots to adults. So we matched that against our CIR, and our preliminary findings are that a little over half of those offices were registered. So we thought that was pretty good in a short period of time. So this is showing you a comparison of doses distributed, meaning sent to the providers, in the blue bar, and the purple bar is the doses reported to the CIR. So here is how we looked at accountability for doses distributed. And we have a lot more vaccine out there than we got reporting for. And I think that's a combination of underreporting and just that the vaccine is sitting in people's refrigerators, or it has been recalled, or didn't get into people's arms. We're doing a provider survey now, actually, a sample survey to find out from providers how much vaccine they didn't use, to try to get a handle on how much underreporting we have. So here's another way of looking at this data: doses distributed and reported to the CIR by facility type. One reason we really wanted to do this analysis was to get a sense of what kinds of facilities were giving the most vaccines, so that in future pandemics, we would know who to prioritize. And I think one lesson learned for us was that the private pediatric offices are really key in terms of giving these vaccines. And we'll think in future about providing perhaps more vaccine to them earlier than we did in the campaign. We did give vaccine to everyone as much as we could in the midst of a shortage, but we didn't have a lot of vaccine to give. We also had to hold a lot of vaccine for ourselves, for our own school outreach and our pods. And we prioritized hospitals and FQHCs, and they perhaps didn't vaccinate as many people as the private peds offices. So it's something for us to think about in planning for future pandemics. This is basically making the same point. The blue part of the pie is the private pediatric offices, who have demonstrated that they really gave the majority of the shots. This is showing how the doses were reported to the CIR during H1N1 and how that differs from how other reporting has happened. I'm happy to say that for all other vaccines, we've almost entirely eliminated paper reporting, which we, at one point, were getting a lot of paper. We have almost no paper now. But for H1N1, for the school outreach and the pods, there were scannable forms used to document the doses by our Bureau of Emergency Management. And about a quarter of the doses, a little more than that, were documented on those forms and reported to us. And you'll see the implications in terms of timeliness of reporting in a few slides here. This is showing you for our online registry, our direct entry, our direct web data entry. The surge in users, the blue bars are all facilities. You can see how many more facilities were using the online registry during the H1N1 campaign. And the pink line is showing you immunizations inserted, meaning new immunizations, immunizations new to our system. So we did have a big surge in users and a big surge in reporting. Timeliness. So the median time between administration of the dose and reporting overall was 9 days, which we thought was pretty good. And for our electronic file transfer, these are basically batch files coming from provider systems into our CIR, was about 6 days. The online registry, the direct entry, which is in real time, about 2 days. And paper forms was 41 days. So not good to be reporting on paper. And we can see that the pods, the schools, the worst offenders were the hospitals that we allowed to use the paper forms and didn't go well in terms of timeliness. So here's a graph showing how much vaccine was distributed in 2009 by our health department in comparison to previous years. And the purple part of this is the H1N1 vaccine. So just a visual sense of the kind of work that our health department had to do to get these doses out, you know, it's really quite dramatic. Here's a table showing individuals immunized based on CIR data. As of now, we're showing that about 840,000 people in New York City got at least one dose of vaccine. Of those, 193,000 received two doses, and a little over 1 million doses have been reported to date. We're looking at estimated coverage now of children. We're waiting a little longer to look at adults to try to get more of the data in, because we think most of the underreporting is more on the adult side. But overall, we're looking at about 25% of the children under 19 were vaccinated with H1N1 based on CIR. So our challenges. Our challenges were many, and I'm sure all of you had many of the same challenges. Allocating the vaccine was a nightmare. The changing forecasts, not enough vaccine or the right kind of vaccine to meet demand, and then all of a sudden we had a huge surplus. The surge in registration and ordering, we were really not well positioned to handle. Our telephone and fax lines actually went down several times, and when they were up, they were constantly busy. And we really had a scramble to redirect people to communicate with us in different ways. So we sent people to this NYC flu email box, and we assigned it to several staff. And several of us, including me, spent long, long hours answering emails, mostly about where's my vaccine, what's the status of my vaccine order. And Dr. Zucker, who heads up our immunization program, started sending weekly letters to all the registered providers by blast, email, and fax, an update of what was happening with the allocation, with anything that was going on in the campaign. And that helped get the word out and relieve some of the overload on the fax and phone. Our biggest problem was that even though we had done a lot of work to integrate CIR's data systems and VFC's data systems beforehand, and we were accounting for VFC vaccine, they are still separate information systems. And having to try to track where the H1N1 vaccine was going, when it was delivered, it was really a huge challenge. And we were under enormous amount of pressure, particularly during the shortage, to answer people's questions as to when were they going to get their vaccine, what kind of vaccine they were going to get. So we obviously have a lot more work to do to bring these systems into alignment. Of course, it was a big challenge to facilitate reporting by the new registered providers who had never reported to us before. We had no relationship with them. We had to very, very quickly set them all up for their online registry accounts. We didn't think there was time to work with them around getting us electronic batch file reporting. We didn't think that that would happen fast enough. So for the new providers, we asked them to go on the web and enter their doses. But to do that, we had to issue them accounts. We had to support them. We had to train them. It was a lot of work. We used some webinars, huge challenge in that short period of time. As I had said earlier, a big challenge was the delay in the data coming in off of the scanned forms. Our Bureau of Emergency Management handled that. They chose a vendor. Unfortunately, this vendor had not had experience in a large-scale operation, and it took them a long time, really, to set up and figure out how to collect these pieces of paper, scan them in, produce files, and send them to us. So long delay in that data coming in. And we used our registry to report to CRA, the CRA system at CDC. We sent an XML file, and we were a little bit behind in reporting the doses, primarily because early in the campaign, a lot of the doses were documented on paper, and we didn't get that reporting until later.
Another big challenge for us that we haven't figured out how to solve is distributing vaccines to the hospital networks. They have so many different satellite sites. They have so many different clinics within their own facilities. For VFC, we require that they're all pretty much separate and have a separate PIN number. They have to do that if they're located outside the hospital. For H1N1, we just said, you decide. We'll give your hospital pharmacy the vaccine and you can distribute it. That was probably a big mistake on our part because we just couldn't track who they were giving vaccine to. Their facilities, their satellites would call us and order vaccine. We had many, many duplicate orders. Many of their own sites didn't know they were supposed to be getting vaccine from the hospital pharmacy. We had a really hard time figuring out who submitted the vaccine provider agreement. You know, had I to do it over again, I would have considered every single separate satellite clinic its own facility for purposes of the vaccine provider agreement ordering and distribution processes. But we were under a lot of pressure to get the vaccine out quickly, and that's why we suspended some of those best practices. So lesson learned are that we have to really streamline our registration, our vaccine ordering processes. Again, we had some of these systems on the web. We thought they were pretty good. We thought people could easily use them. What happened is that in most cases, a fax or a phone call was also required in addition to using the web, and it overwhelmed us. It just overwhelmed us, the fax and the phone call. So we're trying to figure out how to make these web systems better and get people off the phone and off the fax machines. And we have a lot more to do in terms of integrating our CIR and our VFC databases and functions and staff, actually. We want to improve the ability to track ordering, placement of order with CDC, and receipt of order by the provider. And we also discovered that in VACMAN and in CIR, there were two very different systems for classifying provider sites. So when we needed to pull out, say, all the private pediatric offices and see who got vaccine and who didn't and try to direct the vaccine to those who didn't, we actually got two different lists, and it led to a lot of misunderstandings. So we need to align those. And our next steps are we're doing this evaluation. We're contacting providers. We have a survey out there. And actually, what was a big surprise to me that the initial results are very positive so far. I guess when you're in the middle of it and people are calling you and screaming at you and sending you nasty emails, you think that all is going wrong out there. But I guess what you learn is that you hear from the people who want to complain, and you don't hear from perhaps the vast majority who were more pleased with how we were trying to do this job. Again, we're integrating our CIR, VFC systems, staffing, and program functions. All the staff in these units are meeting biweekly to work through how to integrate their daily work. We're enhancing the CIR to enable online vaccine ordering and order status tracking so that the providers themselves, like, you know, for UPS or for FedEx, can go online and get some information on their own without having to call us or fax us. And we're trying to figure out ways to improve two-way communication with our providers. We had a good experience with the NYC flu email box, so we're going to expand use of a Bureau of Immunization email box to, again, get people off the phones and off the fax machines and get responses to them in a more timely manner on our part. So in conclusion, we think CIR did successfully facilitate H1N1 vaccine distribution and tracking of vaccine uptake. We were the primary data source for weekly Commissioner of Health reports and for this evaluation that's underway now. In the midst of the shortage, CIR was able to help target vaccine resupply. We looked at the priority providers like the PEDS practices, and those that were reporting more than 50% of the doses we had given them up to that point, we automatically resupplied them. So that was a really useful tool for vaccine allocation at a very difficult time. And out of this H1N1 campaign has come, you know, the good side of it all is that we did establish relationships with many adult immunizers. They're registered in the CIR database. We have their fax numbers. We have their email addresses. And they are now getting our communications. And we are already recruiting them for the 2010 to 2011 influenza campaign. So I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Vicky Papaduka, Mike Hansen, and Jane Zucker, and three other CIR staff, many of you know, Angel Aponte, Melissa Mickle-Hope, and Paul Schaefer. And I thank you very much for having the opportunity to share our experience with you.